Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of Never Offside with Julie and Kat. Today, we are going to be joined by our most requested guest via our listeners, the first female hockey coach in NHL history. It's Coach Jessica Campbell, so we are very excited for that. Also, happy birthday, Jules.
Thank you. I turned 36 yesterday, guys.
What'd you do?
Well, my actual birthday was just schlepping kids around to baseball practice and whatnot. Jeff's on the road, so it's kind of just, I don't know, it was just another day. But Friday, my girlfriends, like, came over, and we actually went and did a hip-hop dance class.
Oh, my God, I love
and
that.
It was a blast. Like, I want to join dance classes or something, which... You know I want to be on Dancing with the Stars one day, so maybe this was my first step.
Well, you sent me that video, and you were a lot better than I thought you were going to be. Like, no shade. But those classes look really hard, and I always get intimidated when someone asks me to go to that. So props to you. You did a really good job.
Well, thanks. Nobody saw the video because some of my friends have forbidden
I was gonna say that would be really fun to cut to, like, a little snippet of that video.
Yeah, maybe there's a way we can send it off to the magicians and they can, like, blur people out. I don't know if my friends would appreciate being exploited on the pod. But we were great, and I loved it, but it was fun.
Looked like a lot of fun. And then you told me a little bit about the luncheon, but I mean, speaking of fun.
Yeah, I did have a filled weekend. It wasn't, you know, it was really nice. Saturday, the Red Wings wives and all the sports wives across the four teams here in Detroit were invited by the Pistons to this women's empowerment lunch. It was their first annual. They've created this group. It's actually really cool, called Detroit Femme Collective. And it's really a kickoff to something super awesome, and it's just gonna be huge. And they really just want to bring the women of these sports teams, from upper management to support staff to players' wives, all together and create this group that just connects on different levels and for different initiatives. This month we brought donations towards a women's shelter for Women's in History Month. And it was really, really neat. And we were talking about it, Kat. And I'm like, you gotta do this in the Bay Area.
I'm inspired by this. I love it so much because part of my job at the Dodgers was kind of connecting, you know, the different teams, Lakers, Clippers, you know, Kings, Dodgers. So I love this idea from the family aspect. Like, yeah, it's just getting to know, even just making friends in your sports community. Like, it's just, like, such a cool idea. And teaming up for charities. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it was so fun. And it just, like, humanizes it again, right? Like, I'm sitting there visiting with some of the Pistons wives, and they're like, we should do a game swap. Like, we come to a game with you guys, and you guys come to a game with us. Just to have, like, different perspective of... like, their thing. And like you said, getting to know, like, you know, for us, it's different. This is home, but every other year we've played in, it's our home away from home. And you really have to dig in, and it builds community. And it's really special. And I feel very fortunate that the Pistons have, you know, really taken this on. And I learned, like, the Pistons organization is, like, has so many women in high up positions there, and they're really leaning into it. And I just can't say enough things. And I actually spoke on a panel at the luncheon, which was, like, again, one of, like, those pinch me moments of, like, yes, I do. I guess I do have things to share, owning a female business and, you know, our podcast and things like this. So really cool. And I'm all for it. And I'm willing to help you in the Bay Area to come help your first annual.
I know. This is me summoning, you know, the 49ers, the Giants, the Warriors, the Earthquakes. Like, this is, I want to make this happen. I'm going to bring this up to the Sharks management, and I'm going to try and make a Bay Area. Like, what would you even, member group?
I don't know, but you guys could do it in Napa, and it could be, like, Cool.
I mean, speaking of like breaking the ice, like get us all on a bus to Napa and see.
Yeah.
See, you know.
Sky's the limit.
I know. I was curious if any of the girls had told you that they hadn't been to a hockey game yet. You know what I mean? Did anyone say that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the majority of most of them have not been to a hockey game. So it's like we have to make the crossover happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's super cool. And I just met so many cool people, and I learned about like the NBA's G League, which is like the AHL. Mm-hmm. And they're right here like at Wayne State, and they're like, you have to take the boys to the game. You can essentially sit courtside.
Well, that's cool. All right, Bay Area. Let's make this happen. I actually have a funny story I was going to tell you about the Bay Area. So this week I did an interview with NBC Bay Area, in the middle of the interview, the reporter was like, who has never met me before. He was like, so I saw that you have two teenagers. Can you tell me about that? And I was like, what? Like, excuse me? Like,
no.
Yeah. And I was like, first I was like really taken aback. But then I was like, oh my God.
Oh.
If you do a Twitter search of Tyler, you're going to see that he has two teenage boys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I was like, oh my God, he probably just went on social media.
Will and Macklin are your children.
Correct. So I literally said to him, I was like, oh my God, I think you're mistaking this like ongoing joke that we're parents of Will and Macklin. And he was like, oh my God, sorry. And I was like, no. Oh, I mean, God, it makes that's sense. Funny.
Well,
I know.
And it's only... our hopes are getting closer to them actually getting bunk beds in your house next year.
Well, speaking of, so then Will Smith's mom was at the game on Saturday right after I've done this interview. And I told her, I was like, oh, my God, like literally it's gone to the fact that reporters are thinking that I'm your son's mom. And she was dying because she like loves, you know, the funny stuff on social. And then after Ty surprised me with all the guys coming over to our house for a game night after the game because it was a great game. And I told those two in their potential new house about it. So it was just very...
Did they go look for a room? Did they go pick their rooms?
No, but they're getting more comfortable in the house. So
I love it.
Yeah, so it's gotten to that point. So.
All right, and up next, we are going to chat with Jessica Campbell just about her journey to the NHL, what skills she found kind of supported her resume, if you would, to get her there, her celebrity doppelganger. Also what she does pregame to just kind of separate herself from the game and to just disconnect. That's up next.
NHLShop.com, the official online store of the National Hockey League and the world's largest selection of officially licensed NHL fan gear with unique one-of-a-kind designs by Fanatics. And all the latest styles for every NHL team. Don't miss out. Shop now and get today's special offer. NHLShop.com, a Fanatics experience.
We are back and we are joined by our guest. She is the first female coach in NHL history. She's the assistant coach of the Seattle Kraken, and we had so many people asking for her to come on, so we are so excited to see you. Thank you so much for joining us, Coach Jessica Campbell.
I'm excited.
Well, we're honored to have you here. This is so cool. I feel like the former athletes in us are like just totally fangirling over you, and you know, we've been doing our research over the weekend, and we've polled our audience, and you have been the most requested guest by far, like since we started this. So cool to have you.
Yeah. So what Julie said, we did like an Instagram poll, and we got an overwhelming response for you. It was crazy and so cool, and just so many different ages, you know, of people. So just overall, like you're getting so much attention, and how are you managing that, and how does it feel?
Ah, gosh, it's a loaded question because I, you know, ultimately I'm just doing my job every day and like love what I get to do. I've always been in this game, and hockey's been just a big part of my life, much like it's controlled probably your guys' lives too. So I think waking up every day with just the privilege of getting to do what I love and knowing that I'm inspired by, I think, the greater privilege of this opportunity that's beyond the game. Obviously, I think it puts added pressure, and it's sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit under a microscope, but I try to really shift that into a good mental frame where I see everything and try to see everything as an opportunity. Because there's been such positive, overwhelming support. And like you said, it's been all ages, girls, young girls, women, young boys that I even come across. And obviously everyone in the game has just been, I think, celebrating this milestone. But the balance of managing my actual job and keeping my focus and priorities on doing my job, but then trying to find the moments along the way to kind of like take it in and then connect with the community, connect with fans, and connect with people that come through social opportunities to just share what the journey's been like, this being one of them.
Do you have anybody kind of like that you lean on, or like that you, you know, maybe mentors, or because this is just like such a big, like you said, under a microscope. And like, is there anybody that you chat with, like bounce things off of, anything like that?
Yeah, someone I try to lean on probably the most is Cassie Campbell. She's just been a constant mentor for me throughout my career, but even more so now. It's just someone who kind of went through those early days in broadcasting as a woman and a very qualified, capable speaker in this game and mind for the game of hockey. And she kind of, I think, had to go through some similar probably experiences that perhaps I'm in now, but in a different magnitude or in a different role behind the bench. So she's just someone that, you know, win or lose, she's a phone call or a text away, and we obviously cross quite often. But I think it's critical to find strong female supports, because as much as I feel very much supported in Seattle and our staff's been great, I think it's still very different for them to understand like what it would be like for me to be in this position, because, you know, they don't put on heels and wear the same shoes as much as our job is the same. I think there's different emotions that I'm experiencing that they do a great job of supporting me, but having a strong female role model, someone I've looked up to, has been huge for me to have that to balance, you know, some of the conversations you might want to just keep private. I think that's been huge for me to go through it and navigate it with someone else.
Your family and friends reacting to this. I saw your hometown, there's a billboard now.
Right? Yeah, I just was actually on a FaceTime with my brother on the plane getting here, and he's like, now every time I run the 5 kilometer perimeter, that's clearly how small it is. your damn face.
Just a reminder to call your sister.
Exactly. That means we need to keep in touch more. But yeah, that's been pretty surreal, because you never go through life ever picturing that for yourself. But our town is so small. It's a little hockey community. And, you know, just the milestone, I think, of the young kids back home that, you know, had I been able to see this for myself at 5, 10 years old playing hockey, I think I would have dreamed even bigger than, you know, just loving the game and seeing where it could take me. So just to know that there's, you know, a piece back home for other kids to potentially imagine dreams beyond what they, you know, think can exist is, I think, just what that means for our town.
Who was the first person you called when you got the call about the job?
Oh, man, I called my mom and dad pretty much immediately, and it wasn't news yet, obviously, publicly, but I had been told by Dan, our head coach, that the job was mine if I wanted it. Obviously, I wanted the job, but when I called home, I just immediately started crying. Happy tears, but my parents thought something was wrong. Of course, I was okay, and pretty quickly we were all crying, and it was pretty surreal, because I think I've been working at this, and I've been, you know, in the last couple of years, the grind of the American Hockey League, as you guys understand, the number of games, like we're just always playing. And we had 2 long playoff runs the last 2 years. So I never really had a huge off season, which is a good thing, I understand, in this league. But
taxing.
Yeah, it's taxing. It's taxing emotionally too and mentally. But I never had a ton of time to go home. And you know, see family, and those windows are really small and you cherish what you do get. So just being able to quickly, you know, I was obviously in Seattle when I got the news and I was at development camp. So I was like right in it in my AHL role. And then like quickly overnight, I went from AHL coach to NHL coach. And yeah, it was a lot of tears, a big celebration. And yeah, a lot of just, wow, this is happening. This is real. And here we go. So many people, friends and family get to come on this journey with me. And the dream was kind of realized for everyone.
We saw you say that the first game was like your wedding, your hockey wedding.
I loved that.
Yeah, I love that.
We were passing stuff back and forth just over the weekend, kind of, you know, getting our bearings and everything and, you know, deciding what to wear for like this big debut. It's part of it. And, you know, Kat and I were discussing it. It's like you're under a microscope, but for so many reasons, like, you know, players, they're always focused on the player's fashion and things like that. And women, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, it's part of us and it's part of our, you know, it's part of our identity. It's part of our story. You get to show your personality with it. You know, you're a professional, but you're looking damn good doing it too.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know what? I think especially a fashion is a form of expression. I think it's always been something I guess in my own ways tried to be fashion forward, but yeah, obviously the home opener night, and it's funny because a lot of people are, you know, bringing up my suits and what I choose to wear, and I'm like, you know, I just think how you present yourself is a reflection of, you know, what you believe about yourself. And I think confidence comes in that, and it's like the cliche, like look good, feel good, play good. Like you really, how you show up and how you present yourself is an expression of how that confidence I think is felt. And it is an odd thing that we are unfortunately potentially put on a different type of microscope as women, and that's evaluated. And like, I've gotten everything from like, you look so professional, amazing, to like, you look like you're ready to go out to the club. Of course, I like try to avoid all of the nonsense, but social media is a beautiful thing when you get to connect with all the amazing, but there is also whatever out there. So it's funny because, like, you know, I've just always tried, especially in the last 5 years, like entering more into this side of it where I am the only female and I don't have someone to potentially turn to of like, how do I dress? How do we show up? Because what's appropriate, what's not? And I think just trying to authentically express myself that I do think you can be feminine and female, and that can be displayed in fashion, and doesn't, you know, I don't have to wear suit and tie and try to fit in. I'm not going to look like one of them. So why would I try to change who I am to express myself a certain way to fit the mold when I already don't look the part? And I think that can be a beautiful thing, and it shouldn't be criticized or judged either way. It's just, this is how I'm showing up, this is who I am, and I'm not going to shift who I am, especially in terms of fashion, to try to fit a mold that I never really fit in to begin with. So here we are now, and just going to keep carrying on as I am.
It's funny, the Kraken posted a picture of you in the hallway coming in, and a fan commented, petition for way more Coach Campbell fit checks, and I got thousands of likes, so that made me happy.
I'm going to find that and sign that petition too.
Yeah, I'm going to like that too. Another thing that I loved that you have said before is that sometimes it's a fan's first game, especially young female fans, and the first thing that they're seeing is a normal bench with a female coach. So how many fans have you met with having their first game, and, you know, what have they said to you?
Oh man, it's been so many. Like, you know, the magnitude of NHL games, and just even fans that come behind the bench, especially in warmups. That's kind of the time where obviously I can connect with them, and the ones that get there early, but it's been all ages. And in Seattle, we're still a pretty new and a very diverse hockey market. And so I think hopefully we've won some new fans, hockey fans, that, you know, if this has meant something to them in our sports community. But the young girls, obviously, that one hits me obviously the most. Just I get emotional, especially with we started the little friendship bracelet thing, and you know, the first time a little girl in Dallas, I think it was like game 3 or 4 for us early in the season, she did her whole like going to my first NHL TikTok game, you know, like little video, and she had her bracelet, and that's what then kind of inspired me to do something more, to be able to kind of have a moment with fans where it's like, this means something right now, and it's going to mean hopefully something so much more to them after they process this, or they're old enough to maybe potentially process or go home and have the conversation with their mom, with their dad. But it's also, I think, means something for the young boys also in the game, you know, for them to be able to look at female leadership as just a normal thing. And that presence, I think, is important, because beyond hockey, whether it's sports or other industries, I think just normalizing that, like, even if you don't see yourself in a traditional space, like, you can still believe that it's possible to do it. Like, if you have the talent and the skill set and the ability, doesn't matter how different you are, you still have the permission from anyone, and yourself included, to believe that you can like walk through that door. It might not be easy. And that's kind of just what this year has felt like for me, is so many people have been like, you know, so proud and beaming with pride, but I've always been in the game. Hockey's always been, I've always been walking into boys' locker rooms at such a young age when there was no girls' teams, to then now obviously coaching on this side of it. I've always seen myself in this game. So there's little moments, and there's been hundreds of fans in all ages. I think even women, it's a celebration for women too. And that's also been huge for me, is just the amount of female support that I've had, because I think that's also really, really critical.
Something we always talk about together, me and Julie, is we love the different vibes of fan bases. And we've been to so many different teams, and, you know, neither Jeff or Ty has played for Seattle. So what is the overall like vibe of the Seattle fans?
Well, our fans are very diverse. They're, you know, from all walks of life. I think some are new hockey fans, some are just big sports fans. Our whole city is very eclectic and unique and special in its own right. So, you know, no one looks the same in the Seattle crowd. Not that anyone really looks the same in any crowd that you go to, but it's very interesting for me growing up in like small town Canadian hockey communities where, you know, everybody's kind of live and breathe hockey where I'm from. And so like going home and playing in Winnipeg, like as obviously the opposing side, but I felt like if that was a real like hockey market of people, and maybe because 50 of them were from my hometown that drove down in buses, but you feel it different. And I think that's what's really been cool for me to start in Seattle, knowing that, you know, even when I got hired with the Firebirds and working in the American League for 2 years, when I first took the job and walked into the arena, like they had already designed a female locker room, a coach's locker room space that no one was using, obviously, but like it was built into the potential growth of what the team could become. And I got emotional by that the first time, because I think it was just a testament to like the sports community, the city, the forward thinking of the team, the organization, of like what they could grow into becoming. And so that's been just like so widely received across our fan base. It gets so much support on social media from our Kraken fans. They get very defensive on anything that comes through that's negative.
I want to go back to, you were talking about confidence and just watching like the stories, like you growing up in a small town, you're the youngest of four. I've just been thinking about your overwhelming sense of confidence. And I think as a mother raising kids, and I'm raising boys, but I always think about like, gosh, raising girls in this world, you know, would feel a little bit different and a little bit more pressure. And I think about how my parents raised me, and similar to listening to your story, I grew up in sports. I grew up playing with boys all the time. You know, to play with them, I had to be the best. I had to, you know, and you had similar sentiments. I feel like that's what gave me the confidence, being the youngest and having to keep up. And I never thought anything different. It was just like, that's all I knew to do. Do you think that is what has played into kind of your whole trajectory and has gotten you here? Because you just didn't, you didn't have a ceiling. You just were like, nope, this is it.
Yeah, honestly, and I don't think it's not necessarily true to say that the youngest doesn't have rules, but I feel like being the youngest of four in a small town where, like, we were just rink rats, and I was always, again, like you, keeping up with my brothers and my sister. Obviously, I was a couple years older. Like, we were always at hockey rinks and go, 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 go. And when you have older brothers too, like, I think they were always bugging me and, like, creating some, like, thick skin. They were trying to scare me in our bedroom before going to bed. Like, anything they could do to, you know, get a laugh out of just having two little sisters. But also being, like, awesome rock star brothers who, you know, wanted us to be strong and brave and, you know, courageous in how we went about playing boys hockey and being, you know, me and my sister both played on boys teams. We were often the only girl on boys teams. So, like, yes, I think in many ways going through that and being the youngest, I think you kind of have fearlessness of, you know, life's in front of you, just chase it, tackle it. I definitely would attest to, like, a lot of my upbringing and the experience I had as being the youngest kid to just, you know, pursue whatever goal it was I wanted to do. My parents kind of gave me permission and support to play every school sport, get involved. And I was always a go-getter when it came to opportunities in school that was a challenge, whether it was, like, you know, just the leadership council, like little things like that. It was like I was kind of always encouraged to just do it. And yeah, the having siblings older than you, I think, definitely pushes you to do more, want to be more mature. Even it was funny, like my oldest brother too, like I was little, like I remember this moment. I was probably 8 years old and I went to my first like summer hockey tournament, which we didn't have the opportunity to do that. But finally, when like a city team called and we went to this tournament, they gave us the like tournament action shots, right, that you get, you can buy for way too much money. And I remember when I got my first like summer action shot back, I brought it home and my brother was 18 and I was 10. He's like, yeah, you got to sign it. And I'm like, what does that mean? And he like sat with me and taught me how to do an autograph. And, you know, my autograph is still the same to this day. Aww. But that you cherish, right, with having older siblings that, you know, that is, there's still so much with me.
I just want some clarity for personal reasons. How did you go from the, like, your power skating business to coaching, like AHL coaching, like in the leagues?
Yeah. So I was coaching when I finished playing, I was doing both. I was coaching at a hockey academy. So I was behind the bench right away my first year out. But what I was really passionate about and what I was doing full time was teaching skating. And I'll try to give the like shortest version of the story because there's a lot of details and kind of the timelines of how this all happened, because it did happen really abruptly and shifted really quickly. But I was behind the bench, so I knew, you know, the coaching aspect, the tactical behind the bench stuff was different than the player development, the skating and the skill stuff, which I was like most passionate about. And I did have, you know, there was visibility around skating coaches in the NHL. And I'm sure you guys know this, like there's been, mostly with figure skating backgrounds, there's been female skating coaches that have done a great job and still are working in the league. And so I kind of was like, you know, if I want to work at the highest level of hockey, that might be my window in. And I love teaching skating. So I kind of was doing that as a priority and then realized that I needed to start my own business if I wanted to kind of really build my portfolio of caliber of player. I was working with all levels, you know, up to 19, even up, you know, juniors, but the pro level players, that was kind of where I was aspiring to. And so when I started my business, I actually, oddly enough, got an opportunity to go coach a junior team and a pro team in Sweden for a very short-term contract. And it actually allowed me to quit my job to be able to start my business to kind of go do that. Even though it was a short-term contract, I went there with kind of everything to gain, nothing to lose. Like, I'm going to go work there with a bunch of pro players internationally. This is great resume building for me. I already know my method, my approach, my style of teaching. It's just more getting the hands-on experience. And when I came home from after those 4 months, I was offered a full-time coaching contract to go back the next season, but then COVID hit. And COVID was like a crazy time, as you know, and everybody kind of, you know, life froze. But for me, it was the best thing that happened for me, because I ended up in Kelowna, which was home for me, where I was living before and operating my business. And I had a limited amount of ice available to me when some of the restrictions started to lift and you could skate in small groups. And that's when they announced the playoff bubble for the NHL guys that year. So as guys were kind of scrambling to get back on the ice and get back into shape, kind of, as you know, that was weird times. I got a call from Damon Severson, who I grew up with in Melville, Sask. He knew I was teaching and doing skating and all that stuff. He's like, hey, can I come skate with you, Jess? I'm going to bring a couple guys. And, you know, what went from 2-3 guys was quickly 20 guys within 2 weeks. And when the restrictions got lifted and they allowed for us to hop on the ice in like a large regular team practice setting with 20 guys, some of the veteran guys who obviously are big reason why I'm here today, truly, like Seabrook, Luke Shen, Shea Weber, all of the more veteran guys of that group, they asked me, like, guys have been loving the skill skates, the power skating skates. Can you come run our practice in a bigger group? And that turned into probably 2-3 months of time together. And they were all my own drills. Like, I was running all my own stuff. And I remember them coming up to me saying, like, we've never done this drill before. Like, is this your drills? You know, like, I had my kind of my own experience and came up with my own ideas. And then as I was answering yes to these, you know, I remember having conversations kind of later towards the end of it, Brent being one of them. He's like, you're going to coach in the NHL someday. It's going to happen. It's a matter of time. And I believed him, but I also was like, wait a minute. Like, I'm not even doing skating anymore. I'm now running practices. And if I can do both of these things, like, maybe that's going to make me almost a double threat if I could get an opportunity by having this skating and skill development background. And that was the epiphany. That was the moment where I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should pursue this in a different capacity by having kind of the blended skill set to do both. And if they're signing up and showing up for my skates and numbers, then obviously they're giving me permission to believe that this is possible. And though I didn't have the visibility in front of me, I think that was honestly the moment the glass was shattered, when I realized, okay, I can do this. I'm doing it on my own. Why can't I do it with a team?
So, okay, now that you're in it and there's no looking back, like, you know, we can get into the where do we go from here, but I'm from like a raising boys that are deep into hockey to, you know, our husbands. What do you think is the most like under coached skill in the NHL? Like, these guys are, you know, professionals, they know what they're doing, but like, they still have to refine themselves, and you have to come in and teach these creature of habits different things. What is one like kind of commonality you see throughout different groups that you're like, this is what I'm gonna go back to?
Honestly, I think that still, like, the skating skills that make some of the most impactful players the most dangerous players on every team. Like, that's something I see. And I think, like, being able to change direction, there's all kinds of different categories that, you know, and different terminology we use now that 5 years ago and even 10 years ago definitely weren't even terms that, you know, shaving ice and like different ways to come out of turns that, you know, look a lot, you know, from a fan's perspective, like, that's the, like, wow, fancy skill. But it's different types of edge control that I think with and without the puck, but mostly with the puck, that I think there was a gap of, it wasn't taught 10 years ago. So some of the veteran players more towards my age, really, I feel like they're still adopting some of those skills and learning them on the fly. And then the quicker they, you know, learn it and take the time to, I think, fine-tune their skills, they quickly can pick them up. But there was a gap, and something that, like, when I was working on some of the stuff with the guys, I think that's honestly what made some of my sessions more attractive, was because they were like all of the young new age kids that came up with like pep skills and these hockey academies that now exist everywhere. They were getting all these skills, but there was a gap where, like, the old traditional skating coaches weren't teaching that stuff, or skills coaches just like shoot the puck as hard as you can, shoot a one timer. And now there's all these blended types of skills, and it's been really interesting to watch some of the youngest players dominate, you know, like even in like San Jose, like looking at Celebrini, right? Like he can play the game at such a different, like in such a unique way, and still dominate as a young kid. So it's pretty cool to watch, but also interesting to see, you know, some of those, the gaps that do exist. And then obviously the need for the skating and skills coaches to be there still.
That's what a social media likes to tell Tyler, that he's not a great skater. So
I'll make sure to like say something to him over the boards when I see him. You're a great skater. Don't let Kat tell you otherwise.
Please do. Please do. I'll love that.
Well, Kat and I both agree. You're not a skater. We can take it whatever direction you want.
You know what? I would love that. He'll be caught off guard, and I will be – I'll attend that game, and I'll get that on camera. So thanks.
It's too good.
Something we always talk about on this pod also is like the human side of hockey and behind the scenes and everything. So that was something I was thinking of for you, getting to know your players so well and everything. You know, trades hit us all so hard. So how is that for you as a coach, you know?
Yeah, it's – well, you know, we didn't have any trades in Coachella in the 2 years in the American League that I was there. And obviously, like, for me as a player, we didn't have trades. Like, I wasn't making any money and playing in a professional league when I played. So that was kind of new for me, just going through, you know, that period of – wait, this is, you know, guys you've been coaching, and we traded away a pretty key power play guy for us. So, you know, just one, you know, it's a new opportunity for someone to step up into that role, but you build a relationship with them, and you feel the loss, like across the locker room. You feel the emotion of some certain guys have been playing, you know, together for so long, and some live together, and kind of saw that kind of trickle through the team, and you feel it as a coach. But, you know, that pretty quickly understand that the business of it is, it's still a business, and you got to move on. And fortunately continue to see them, not always in favor on the other side, but this is what the game's all about. So you can kind of deal with it just knowing it's the business side of that.
Moving from the AHL to the NHL, what are just like the best things about being a coach in the NHL that we wouldn't know?
Well, I think the biggest difference between, for me, having gone through now the transition of being on both sides, like in the AHL, there's not, you know, a huge gap separating American League hockey players and NHL players. It's a little different because you have the younger development players and prospects. So, but in terms of the schedule and the amount of practice time you have in the AHL to like hone in on your game and fine tune your game and work on your game, because there's so much more practice windows than the NHL. It's just like you're traveling, you're playing. As you know, it's like we're always on the road, or when we're home, what's day in between. And those moments of windows are so fewer to practice. And I think what's been really interesting for me is like, obviously we have to rely on video so much more to teach with players and video meetings, but just the amount of few repetitions the guys at the NHL level need to pick up something new or different or to apply to their game, and then like immediately the next night, like I sometimes catch myself, it's like those are the pinch me moments. You're like, is that easy? Like, yeah. So the sky's the limit, right? And I love that from the development side, or from like the skating and skill side, because our guys are still very hungry and want to work on their game, and you got to find those windows to be able to like balance the, you know, the work to rest ratio with the amount of games. But it's been, that was the coolest thing for me, is just, you know, not that it guys in the American League couldn't pick up skills, but it was a longer process of watching them come through their development and fine tune areas of their game. Whereas like, obviously these guys are the best in the world at what they do, and they still have, you know, areas to improve, but you know, it's pretty remarkable to see how just quickly they can translate new ideas and concepts, and the team can potentially have success as a result of it. So I've been loving that part of it.
We got a lot of people asking about what you do for fun outside of hockey and how you relax. So is there anything specific in Seattle that you've been loving or anything like that?
Okay, I feel so ashamed because so many people want to know what my life's like away from the rink. But my life is like at the rink. And when I get away from the rink, I'm just a total homebody. I like to run and like I work out and do all those things. But yeah, Seattle, it's kind of gray and rainy throughout the winter season. I'm looking forward to the summer months to like hike, and I spend a lot of time in Kelowna in the summer, so being able to be outdoors and hike and run. But I would say typically I enjoy golf, but I need to work on my golf game. But that's like a hobby that I do enjoy getting out to do. But I don't have much of a life in hockey season. Do any of us really? Like we live at the rink. So.
Well, that might answer my next question because I'm an LA girl and you keep saying Coachella and my mind goes, you know, straight to Coachella or Stagecoach.
Yeah,
and
yes.
I was wondering if you had gone to any of those. But
Stagecoach. I got to go to Stagecoach. That was pretty awesome.
Nice.
I like to travel. You know, off season, I'm going to try to travel as much as I can.
Back to, since our lives are revolved around hockey, what is a typical like pregame routine for you look like?
Oh, this will be interesting for you guys. Okay, I get up really early, like 5 a.m. Typically run, do my stuff, take care of my own kind of routine, and then get to the rink. My meetings are always in the morning. Run our power play, so my meetings are in the morning. And then after pregame skate, we have a window of, what, 3 hours. I'm not a good napper to begin with. I never have been. I'm working on that. But I typically go home and, like, scroll on my phone. Like, sadly, I just, like, online shop but don't even buy anything. I just kind of
fill your carts.
Yeah. It's like I try to check out. And honestly, sometimes I just turn on the Kardashian or something that's, like, completely checks me out of hockey so I can kind of, like, create the separation of thinking about the game. Mm-hmm. And just relax. But then I only for home games, I go to my hair girl. She does my hair before the games. So I usually spend like an hour and a half in her chair, just like hanging out. And she helps me at least get to the game feeling good without the stress of having, you know, the days where you're like, oh, of course it's a bad hair day. And the amount of time and energy it goes into getting ready. Like
yeah.
As a woman, people don't understand. That's more energy put into a day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I usually go there and then head back to the rink. I also call my grandmother. I FaceTime my grandmother every game day. That's kind of my way to connect with my grandmother. She watches all the games, and it's been a kind of a special game day routine for me. And then I don't call her, I feel like, oh, no, we're going to lose or something's going to, you know.
So, yeah, so bad she juju. Falls into the superstitions.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I never used to be superstitious. Now I just call myself stitious because I'm not on the yeah. goalie level yet or anything.
I was going to say, did you have any superstitions when you were playing, but no?
No, I was never like that. I kind of just needed to be the like goofball and have like a fun routine, kind of pick up whatever vibes everyone else is putting, and didn't like to like get in my head because then I felt like that didn't help me play good if I got too much in my head about everything.
With this with this new light shining on you, have you had any like celebrities reach out to you that have kind of maybe you've been a little bit starstruck or like have just totally like caught you off guard?
Okay. Well, so this has been kind of a running joke for a few years now. But Nikki Glaser has been, you know, coined as I'm her doppelganger. We're twins. So her and I like chat back and forth all the time. Hoping to catch her show. Yeah, she was like reenacting a skit on her show. One of her shows is with my suit. And I don't even know what she was saying. Probably obviously something hilarious, but she's been really cool to connect with. And just recently, like on their podcast, Kylie Kelsey and Kate Hudson gave a shout out. And that was really special, like surreal. Cause I'm like, what is going on? But
yeah,
they're sports fans and obviously in sports. Alana Marr, just like people like female sports people are like really kind of coming together and celebrating this, but those would definitely be the two coolest. And I met she sings with Beyonce back at Stagecoach actually, and she was like super hyped up about this whole, you know, gig and stuff. So she's been someone cool just in music to connect with as well.
Has Nikki made any jokes to you about playing you in a movie?
No, but we have talked about just like, I think she wants to, you know, play on some of the lingo of, you know, what if, you know, she could probably give a great pep talk and make it hilarious, but also something the guys would listen to. I want her to do one of our pregame reads when she comes to Seattle for her show next year. Like, there's no way she doesn't probably have the most epic pregame speech and read all in one.
That would be amazing. Yeah. I'm waiting for that to happen now.
Would be too good.
Well, we like to wrap up with a little quick shootout questions, we like to call it. So what is your favorite arena you've ever played in?
Ooh. Okay, played and now coached in would have to be the Bell Center. I got to play there right before, actually towards the end of my career, right before a Habs game. And I grew up in a Montreal household, like little kids. So that was pretty surreal as a player. And then we had a really good game, thankfully, this year, our game in Montreal this season. But just to, like, I got very emotional. I got emotional as a player, but I got even more emotional on the behind the bench this year. Just, you know what it's like in that arena, the chanting and the singing. And
how, like, do you hold it together?
They play Coldplay. Like, come on. Yeah. Like, how do you not just want to cry before the game as players?
I mean, we cried. We cried when our guys were in the Stanley Cup final there, and they would play that.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
I cried, like, not cried bawling, but I got tears in my eyes. Every time I happened to be in my seats by the time the game started, sometimes I wouldn't be, sometimes I would. I was in my seats when that song came on. There were tears in my eyes every single time. It didn't matter if it was a nothing game. I was emotional. So I can only imagine you on the bench there.
And you know how the away coaches, I think both coaches, no, I think just the away have to walk along the ice to the door. And it's always a challenge in heels, no matter what. Like, I try to conquer that fear, but I do it anyways. Just like hold on to the glass. But all of the fans, like, that was so surreal. Maybe why I was so emotional. There was like young girls, older women, older men, like they were putting their hands up on the glass and like it was just like, I was so touched by magnitude and the impact of how the Canadian kid in me was just hit. And I love it. It's so special, and it just obviously it just creates so much more meaning into the role, what I get to do every day, and knowing that hopefully this is really good for the game.
I'd be bawling, actually, during that moment.
But also walking cross in heels in the ice, like, God, props to you. That is, that's stressful.
You might be the first there, too, walking on the ice in heels.
The first crazy person to do it, but.
Well, then who was your favorite Canadiens player growing up?
Oh, gosh. Well, as a young kid, I looked up to Saku Koivu as a player that I was the biggest fan of. That would probably have been the hockey player, the age that definitely makes me the age that I am, clearly puts into when he was there a long, long time ago. I can't really, you know, celebrate the Habs anymore. There's still some players on their team that I still look, you know, look to as great players, but.
Yeah, you can't root for them.
No, not anymore.
Can you speak French?
No, my mom's French. I can, like, a little bit understand, but my mom is a French teacher, and it's so sad that we don't have it fluently, but it wasn't offered in our, you know, in our schools growing up, so unfortunately it didn't get passed over.
Okay, what's the best meal you can cook?
I make pretty good lasagna. I've had better, but I think my lasagna is good. I can make a good lasagna. Classic hockey player pasta meal.
What's your most used emoji?
Probably the, what's the most used?
You got to act it out too, you know?
Let me look. I feel like I use a lot of them. I've really gotten into the Bitmojis, the ones you can create yourself. Yeah, because there's terrible outfits for women. Like, I have this, like, really granny-looking suit and then, like, this little high blonde ponytail. Okay, the most common I would use is is this one. Why, I don't know. Or this one.
You want all the good vibes, all the good feelings.
I guess so. This must be, like, hope we win. I guess probably it's something to do with game day.
Yeah. I love that. Kind of answered this, but maybe not, because you got to stay up late for games. But are you technically an early bird or a night owl?
Early bird. I struggle post games. Back to backs are tough for me. I'm probably the only one that can fit on my seat, like in my seat with the blanket. But I get up as early as I can and crush my work in the morning. I can't stay up past midnight.
Are you a matcha or coffee girl?
Coffee. All day long.
I was going to say, do you have any like specific pregame coffee needs that you...
I'm just into just black Americanos, but my favorite coffee drink, if I'm like treating myself, is a oat milk dirty chai latte. That's my, I call it like a nice hug. And I give it to people. I'm like, here's a hug. This will change your life, this drink. So make sure you get one.
I'm going to write that down. Somebody
oat milk chai latte with a shot of espresso.
Okay, somebody sounds needs delish. To text that to me, because I always get to like a coffee place and I'm texting Jeff like, what do I order? Tell me the lingo, because I can never
that's
order
that's all I got. Myself. I got nothing else for you. I don't know anything else about the menus.
Funny. Favorite sport outside of hockey and what team?
I mean, I'm very into tennis. I follow tennis. Sabalenka is my girl. I love her. She's the bomb.
Oh, that's cool.
But I think maybe... living in California got me a little bit more into tennis, because I can't play tennis.
Did you go to so the fun. Tournament, Indian Wells?
Yeah, Indian Wells. Yeah. So surreal. After that, I was like hooked.
I believe it. I want to be a tennis player in my next life.
Okay, we'll skip down to the bottom. We have a couple fan questions, just two more.
Okay.
At Florence Crosby asked, what is one thing you've learned about yourself this year?
Oh, I've learned a lot about myself. That perfection is absolutely impossible. Not that that was something new, but I think you can feel perfect about, you know, a meeting or, you know, a game, and still, like, there's so many unpredictable things that can happen that are out of your control. And, like, so to chase that, it's, like, it's very much not a sustainable or a great thing. I think, like, striving to do your best, but knowing that even your best still has unpredictable things that you can't always hang your cap and trust. I think that's just given me a lot more personal grace with myself to let go quicker after things don't work out, where I've always like tried to fix and solve, and that's not always doable. Just have to learn and move on and get better. But that's something that's probably was learned harder this year.
It's good advice for everybody, because, you know, I think, and as an athlete, you're kind of in that perfectionist mindset. So
right.
To switch it over and to realize, you know, like you said, there's so many unpredictables.
This is something that I really learned about the game, that I did not know this before, but more than ever, you feel losses way more as a coach than you do as a player. I don't, not dismissing that players don't feel the losses, because they feel it in their own capacity, and all of them feel, you know, losses differently. But as a player, former player to now coach, you carry losses so much differently and wear it way differently than, you know, players. You have to turn the page the next day, or as coaches, you have to like work through that loss and keep almost revisiting what that loss or that game was in order to improve and move forward. So you can't just like new slate, turn the page. You kind of have to carry it, unfortunately. And that is felt deeper as a coach. A lot more sleepless nights as a coach than I did as a player.
Okay, last but not least, what would you say to 20-year-old Jessica?
Oh, my gosh. 20-year-old Jessica, trust all the unknowns and all of the things that are going to go wrong in your life are actually going to go right for you.
That's beautiful.
Because I don't think I would even be in this position had, like, my playing career not ended the way and as abruptly as it did. Like, I was 25 when I finished playing, and I could have kept playing, but it didn't feel right to keep playing, and it ended for me not in a way that I wanted it to end. So I was kind of like faced with, now what? And I, you know, kind of organically fell right into the coaching role and didn't really want to do it at first, but I had a really good mentor who was like, you're made to coach, you know, get back on the ice, just coach these girls how you would have wanted to be coached in high school. And thankfully he pulled me in that direction, but so many things went wrong in terms of how I saw it at the time, like failed in order to like put me on this path. And if I could go back and or told myself that at 20 years old, I would have trusted and had a lot more grace for what I was going through, knowing it was redirecting me down a path that I'm so thankful for now and cherish all of it.
Gosh, we learned from you.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. I
was well, it's crazy, right? Because you can always connect dots backwards in life. You can't ever, you never can always make sense of things moving forward or as you're going through it. But it's so much easier said than done. But like trusting what you're going through, knowing like this is guiding me somewhere where I don't know. And sometimes that's painful, but just like trusting that it's going to all make sense when it does happen. And gosh, I mean, I never thought I would have to move to Sweden and Germany to like start coaching pro hockey, but so it happened. And then to return back to Canada, thinking that like maybe it would just all happen here. All of those unknowns and like kind of paths that were very confusing and had really no clarity of where it was going. I just kept kind of following the next yes or the next thing. And all of those moments have, you know, created this opportunity and something I never even imagined was possible until I was really in it.
Your story has been so amazing to follow. And thank you so much for telling us all about it. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. It's really cool to connect with you guys and just you get this more than anyone and live it wholeheartedly in another capacity. And I admire what you guys do because this game is takes a village for everyone. Players, coaches, it's we're all in it together.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. You are truly remarkable. I want to hang out.
Yeah, hopefully we connect or meet along the way.
Wow, she's badass. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what else she does, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I mean, yeah, cloning her would be amazing. Just this season, just one of her on every bench would be, you know what I mean? It would be so lovely to see because she is just an inspiration. And the amount of people that had not questions, they were just sending me, you know, like how she makes them feel emotionally watching her.
Getting to talk to her, she's just remarkable.
What she hit us with at the end there with the advice, I'm like, wow, you're speaking such amazing facts at us, you know. And it kind of reminded me just like of this opportunity for you and I saying yes to this, you know what I mean? Because it is kind of scary putting yourself out there and doing mm-hmm. something that's, you know, uncharted, and how rewarding it is. And you and I talk every week about how rewarding this has been. And it's all from, you know, putting yourself out there and taking opportunities to the fullest. And so it's just kind of brought me there and kind of, you know.
I love that. I couldn't agree more. And I was thinking of just like throughout her like talking and leading up, just like, you know, she's the first. And you think of all the first, like in the PWHL, the first girl to do the Michigan goal, the behind the net just happened like 2 days ago. And I'm just like, she's going to go in the record books. Like, that's so cool. And I got to thinking, I was like, what has Jeff done? Has Tyler done, like, is he the first of anything?
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is the first outdoor hat trick at
that's a big one. So yeah, that's like actually a big one. Jeff's first, the only one I could come up with, is he was the first goal overturned after they implemented the new coaches challenge rule, whatever year that was, which
that's above my hockey knowledge.
It's above your hockey knowledge, but I just remember when it happened, like they made a big deal of it. They're like, the first goal to ever be overturned by this new rule, Jeff Petrie. I'm like, if that doesn't tell his story.
Did they give him a plaque?
No, but I just laugh like that's the first, but just, I don't know, the whole thing, that's just a joke, but
yeah, no, I love it.
She is inspiring, and for like, she kept hitting, not just for little girls, but little boys too, like mm-hmm. telling my boys, they always ask, who are you talking to today, mom? And I was like, the first female coach that she coached for the Kraken, and they're like, she's awesome. We see her in all the highlights. And I'm just like, it's meaningful to every kid. It's just rewriting the norm, and it's just so cool. And now getting to know her,
now we're best friends, so
yeah, it's, you now know. We're gonna hang out.
I love it. It was just amazing to talk to her. So yeah. Really, I feel like we could have her on every episode and we'd be very happy.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to run here. Jeff is playing his first game back in 2 months. I feel like nervous, jittery. They're out west, so it's the late start here. But I got to go watch my guy.
All right, good luck, Jeff.
Yeah, so you guys, just thanks for tuning in to Never Offside. I can't believe we've made it to double digits. Follow, like, subscribe on all of your podcast channels and listen to all of our past episodes. And just tell us in our comments on our Never Offside pod on Instagram, what do you want to hear, who you want us to talk to. Nothing's off limit for us. So thanks for listening.
Thanks. See you next week.